Subcommittee today. We have only one item to be heard. That's SB 418 by Senator Hernandez, dealing with skilled and trained workforce for public contracts. Senator, when you're ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill eases compliance with the skilled and trained workforce requirements for contractors and public agencies on public works projects. The bill excludes certain crafts from the percentage increase specified in the public contract code, and no apprenticeship graduation percentage requirement will apply to Teamster work. Additionally, the apprenticeship graduation requirement of 30% rather than the progressively increasing graduation percentage requirements scheduled to begin on January 1st of 2018 will continue to apply to work performed after January 1st, 2018 in certain listed occupations. Maintaining the 30% graduation percentage requirement for certain listed occupations will allow newly hired recruited apprentices the opportunity to finish their training in order to qualify as skilled and trained workers. With that, I respectfully ask for an aye vote, and I have someone here I'd like to speak in support of the measure as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, member of the committee. Jeremy Smith here on behalf of the State Building and Construction Trades Council. Senator Hernandez did a very good job of describing the bill, what it does, what the amendments in the assembly are doing. I just wanted to add a couple points. First, the number of apprentices in the state approved programs has doubled since the Great Recession. We had a really low number going on because there was no construction. If there's no construction, there's no place to train apprentices. Construction economy has ramped up over the last several years, and the number of apprentices in state-approved programs has followed that trend as well. We are organizing and bringing in apprentices as fast as we can. We are meeting the demands also of AB 2288 from a couple years ago to attract more women apprentices, and SB 1 that was passed this year. And pre-apprenticeship programs are also starting to ramp up as well and become more prevalent so that when those apprentices come to the programs, they are ready to go. They know they want to be a construction worker. They know how to show up on time. They know how to, they know what's in store for them. So things are moving, things are happening. This bill gives some of our programs that are a little slower than others, a little more time to keep that ramp up going and get more apprentices trained so that we can meet the demands of the economy. For those reasons, we urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Madam Secretary, before we continue, let's establish a quorum.
Bradford?
Here.
Bradford here, Stone. Stone here, Atkins, Jackson.
Here.
Jackson here, Mitchell.
We have a quorum. You may continue. Any additional witnesses in support? Witnesses in opposition? Seeing, hearing none. Questions from committee? Senator Jackson. Well, here we go.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Richard Markison, representing the Western Electrical Contractors Association, American Fire Sprinkler Association. We actually had a position of support if amended with the earlier version of the bill. Those amendments were not taken, so I'm in a little bit of a difficult position because we offered the amendments that increased the coverage of the scale back and also gave some latitude to small public agencies in rural jurisdictions that are being challenged with complying with a skilled and trained workforce, and also eliminated what we believe is a duplication between the skilled and trained workforce requirement and an existing law, the requirement that fire sprinkler fitters and electricians be certified, which we think is a higher level that the state already tests these graduates from apprenticeship program. Those amendments were not adopted. And ultimately, we think that the origin of the skilled and trained workforce requirement arose from a desire to take over refinery work from another union, and then we've seen it expanded into other alternative procurement methods. My clients have a great deal of respect for the author and for the representative from the building trades, but ultimately we believe that the push to expand skilled and trained workforce requirements is part of a bigger political objective to encourage more project labor agreements, because as you know, most of the skilled and trained workforce requirements have exceptions that if there is a PLA in place, that either the contractor does not have to report on his workforce composition, or he or she is completely exempt from the skilled and trained workforce requirement. And so we think that it is definitely an unbalanced requirement that contractors have in order to comply with the state law. For those reasons, I guess we are still supportive amended. We don't believe that at this point in the legislative session the amendments will be accepted, but we have concerns about the bill and how it picked and chose certain crafts, the carpenters, operating engineers, teamsters, and masons, and gave them lower standards than the rest of the construction industry. We actually think that will make it more confusing for public agencies and for contractors, because now you will have different standards for different trades. So we think that what really is warranted is a more thoughtful and overarching review of skilled and trained workforce mandates, what it is going to be doing to the construction industry, particularly as we're approaching 2020, when 60% of journey workers will have had to have graduated, and will the industry actually be able to comply with those requirements? Thank you.
Did you want to respond to any of that?
Okay. Hi, Kim Stone on behalf of Associated Builders and Contractors of Northern California, with very similar concerns to those that Mr. Markison just articulated. Associated Builders and Contractors of Northern California also has a robust apprenticeship program and is concerned about situations that end up advantaging one kind of apprenticeship and workers over another. Thank you.
Senator Jackson.
I think we got one more.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Hello, Damon Conklin on behalf of California Builders and Contractors and Exchanges. We represent over 3,000 commercial construction companies throughout the state. We want to echo the previous comments. Our concerns more tailored towards specifically, while we appreciate the author's policy desire to ease compliance, and we're supportive of that, we'd like to see it broadened and also include to rural areas.
Yes, thank you. I'm also looking forward to the responses to those, but I had a couple questions. I'm wondering, were the goals in the original bill just overly ambitious, or was there some kind of a glitch that reduced the ability to recruit?
You're talking about the original bill that this bill was, this current vehicle is?
No. The original goals of this particular bill. Of that you are, you're now asking sort of to pull back the date for compliance because you need more time, and I'm just wondering why that is.
Well, I would say that we started those percentages at a time when things were still low in the construction industry in terms of attracting apprentices, and we were starting to get a lot more work showing up. As I said before you arrived, if there's no work, there's no need for apprentices, because they have to train on the job. And so when we started the skilled and trained workforce requirements, as Mr. Markison suggested, in the refineries, that was a different reason. There was a different reason for that. We expanded it to all industries, because as the construction industry was ramping up, we thought that we could, those were reasonable percentages to meet moving forward. Some unions have organized slower than others. Some apprenticeship programs take longer than others to finish. So we do need a little more time in some of the crafts that are mentioned, to get to a point where enough apprentices are graduating to meet the demand that thankfully is out there, because it means the economy is back from the Great Recession and things are getting built.
And the other question, if I may, Mr. Chair, is on behalf of my female gender here, you know, these are good jobs, good paying jobs, but the number of women who are active apprentices is still only 6.3%. This is, you know, these are good jobs, and they have flexibility to them. And I'm sure there are a lot of women out there who would really respond favorably. So could you tell me you know, on the issue of recruitment, I think that's probably the focus. What are you doing? Why has this been such a challenge? And what more can you do to get women at 52% of the population to at least be in double digits?
Well, I would say a few things. First of all, we agree there needs to be more women in the trades. We ran a bill by Assemblymember Burke 2 years ago, AB 2288, that required pre-apprenticeship programs to have a plan for outreach specifically to women if they're going to take money from the Workforce Development Board in their area. SB 1 has a pre-apprenticeship Workforce Development Board section in it that is also meant not just to do outreach to women, but to disadvantaged youth, to formerly incarcerated, all those groups that need to be represented.
Great.
Right. So, and I would also just say, you know, with the decline of career technical education in the schools, not enough kids of all walks of life are being exposed to working with their hands, and that is especially prevalent for the young ladies in high school, young women. They are not spending an hour a day in a shop class, realizing that there's a world of work out there that they can get into that has all the things you described, a good wage, good benefits, that doesn't require them to go to college and spend a lot of money at a UC or a CSU and graduate with a degree that doesn't get them a job. So we're working on that too. We have made a real push over the last several years to get more money in the budget for school districts to do career technical education. The last two school bonds have had $500 million in each earmarked for construction of CT facilities. That's really the other prong that needs to be looked at is how do you track these young people before they get out of high school to these careers. So we're working on it legislatively here with the Burke bill and SB1, and we're trying to work on it from the other angle, getting kids attracted to this career early on.
So I'm interested in what the trades are doing to bring more women in. I understand you know, the legislative approach, but you know, if there were, no one's suggesting this, but if you had a mandate that said, hey, if you want to be able to assure or to obtain programs like this or reduce the, you know, requirements and so forth, but in order to do that, we are going to require that you have a certain percentage of the apprentices be women, mm-hmm. What would that entail? What would you do to achieve that goal?
Well, I would say that our on the one hand, our unions are behind the legislative push because we're a council of all the unions. So that is something that our unions are doing. It's not just the legislature and Cesar and I and Robbie doing that.
Right.
But our unions spend a lot of time, the business agents and the apprenticeship coordinators spend a lot of time at local schools, going to job fairs, doing all the things that all employers do to get in front of young men and women before they get out of high school and at college campuses. What we're seeing is that as much as we have to offer and as much as we want there to be more women in the trades, it's not a job that attracts women on the natural. For whatever reason, it's too bad. But I know that our unions are, this is something that we acknowledge and we understand, and the numbers are very stark, that we need to have more women in the trades, and our unions are doing all they can, both here and in the field, to attract women, because it's a great career.
So it's an interesting point. It doesn't attract them on the natural. I won't spend a whole lot of time, but I did meet with a number of the women in my district, the few women in my district who are actually members of trades, and they're all members of trades because they have family members who are members of trades.
That's right.
And they all said, you know, they didn't think that it was an occupation for them. So the answer, it would seem to me, is to go down, dig down into the grammar schools. And, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, I think if the trades were really, really serious about this, or if they really had to, you know, there were numbers here that we had set up a certain percentage, which we're not, I don't see that happening necessarily, but I'd sure like to encourage, when you see what the problem is, and I don't think it's rocket science, yeah, they don't think that they could be electricians or, you know, any of the other trades, unless their dad is, or they have an uncle who is, or maybe they have a sister who's in an apprenticeship program. Seeing other women in that field opens up that possibility to them. And I would hope and suggest and urge that this is something that the trades try to accomplish short of being mandated to do anything. I mean, that's, as my colleague, the good senator from San Diego, said yesterday in a hearing we had on trying to get more women on corporate boards, you know, better to have people do it voluntarily than make it a requirement. And I just would hope that as, you know, we do make these concessions and recognize, and I think the point about, you know, being overly ambitious the first go around because we were dealing with a much lower bar is a legitimate explanation. But it just to have 6% of your apprentices as women not okay, not acceptable, and I hope that you will do more in that. And I'd be happy to work with you if, you know, there's anything that I could do, and I'm sure that the Women's Caucus would be happy to be helpful. And if it's something in our schools, just a book that talks about non-traditional careers for girls. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, doctors, there were no women doctors. And there were very few women lawyers, and there were certainly no women judges. And it's by seeing people out there doing the work and being encouraged to participate makes a difference. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I just think it's important that we, you know, bring those numbers up considerably.
We agree.
Thank you.
We agree.
Could I address Senator's point? Thank you. We share your concern as well as the building trades for the underrepresented population in the apprenticeship community. In fact, the majority of my clients' apprenticeship programs are administered by women, not intentionally, but our hope is that that will further give the programs a better understanding of the needs of women apprentices and women journey workers. Would also point out to Senator Jackson is that Assemblymember Caballero had a measure that unfortunately was held in Assembly suspense that would have allocated some additional revenue to the Division of Apprenticeship Standards to help programs in the construction trades. It was sponsored by tradeswomen in order to encourage and enhance the participation of women in the construction trades. And we certainly supported that and would like to see that emphasis continue and assistance to the programs to address what you perceive are, you know, some of the intrinsic problems with getting some populations. But women, minorities, and veterans are all very important to our programs, that they should be full participants.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Before I let you close, I too had a question as it relates to diversity, not only women, but minorities as well. And as I visit a lot of these projects, I see very little diversity on these work sites. So what are you doing in your recruitment to make sure that we are, or that you are doing a better job at diversity?
Well, I think it's the answer is going to be very similar to what Senator Jackson said. It's something we acknowledge and we understand. I don't have the apprenticeship numbers in front of me for minorities. I know it's 6% for women, but I think it is a higher number for minorities. Not enough.
No.
Agreed. But it's the same thing we would do to attract women. It's to show up where these kids are, where these young men and women are, and show them that there's a career there for them. And we do that. You know, a lot of our unions, especially in Southern California, are led by minorities. The apprenticeship coordinators themselves come out of the trades. They're minorities. We're doing all we can in that sense to attract women, minorities, veterans, the whole gamut, because it's important and it's a great career. And
I agree, and I was pretty adamant about SB1 including that language in the bill to make sure that not only women, but disabled veterans and minority-owned businesses as well are involved in this, as well as workforce, the labor force. So I really would like to see a real concentration there, because we built this country working with our hands, and for some reason we devalue it now, and I don't necessarily blame the unions for that. I think, again, as you touched upon it, we don't offer shop classes in schools. When I was in junior high school, you had industrial arts, you had wood shop, you had architecture, you had even automotive classes when you got to high school, and those no longer exist there. So I think we do need to make a better effort in putting those back into our public school system. But at the same time, I think we can do a better job professionally from a labor standpoint by having women out there recruiting at these job fairs, because I never see a woman at the booth. So maybe have the women out there. That'd be a good visual, right? Because if you don't see it, you don't believe it. So anyway, and I would just, my last point is that we've excluded almost 20-something disciplines there, and I find it hard to believe that there's no carpenters and bricklayers who could fall into. And why do we exclude them? Because it seems like it's plenty of carpenters. I know plenty of people can use a hammer and nail.
I would just say to you that those unions came to us and said they have a concern with those percentages, and we took that at face value and trusted them and added them to the bill. Senator Hernandez was good enough to add them to the bill, and we asked for that, and he did that.
There's a lot of good jobs there, too. All right. Any other questions from committee? Senator Hernandez, would you like to close?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Jackson, obviously the chair, thank you for the comments and your concerns with regard to diversity, especially amongst women. And I echo your sentiments and totally agree. I would also venture to say that if we're dealing with public projects, we have limitation, especially with Proposition 209. And both of you all know what I feel about 209 and how we should repeal it, et cetera. With regard to this bill, as was mentioned by the support, is at the time of the recession, a lot of the skilled craftsmen left the building trades because there was no jobs. They went to other states. We just weren't building. We right now are having a package of bills in the legislature on housing to try to reduce the bureaucracy, the bonds, to try to Senator Atkins' bills for low affordable homes and housing, which I hope gets passed. But the element that we're not talking about is the skilled labor force to build these homes. So I think this is just one part of how we're going to be addressing that. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I would respectfully ask for an aye vote, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. We're seeking a motion. It's been moved by Senator Atkins. The motion's assembly amendments be concurred in. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Bradford?
Aye.
Bradford, aye. Stone? Stone, I. Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, I. Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, I. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, I.
Senator, you have five votes. Your bill is out.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank
and
you.
Members.
And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the August 30th Labor and Industrial Relations hearing. Thank you for your participation. We stand adjourned.